Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, we are going to talk about navigating the patient-nurse relationship, insights from the Rheumatology Nurses Society. Our guest is Gwen Robinson, who currently resides in Texas, where she works as a supervisor and infusion nurse specialist for three sites in South Texas. She began her nursing quest in 1990 at University of Texas Medical Branch Hospital, where she worked as a patient care technician before earning her licensed vocational nursing degree from Galveston College in 96. From there, she transitioned to telemetry and pediatric units at Mainland Hospital and later to the emergency department after receiving her RN from Alvin Community College in 2001. Gwen's career in rheumatology began in 2006, when she began working part-time as an infusion nurse for Genizin in Dallas. This opportunity led to her current full-time position at Texas Rheumatology. Gwen is a member of the American Nurses Association, Texas Nurses Association, and Rheumatology Nurses Society. She is extremely involved in her church and local community, volunteering whenever possible, including collecting shoes, socks, blankets for the homeless throughout the year. When she finally sits down and rests or relaxes, she enjoys days at the beach, swimming in pools, and traveling. Gwen, welcome to SpondyCast. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you so much, Jill. I'm sad to be here.
I'll say you are not a woman who sits still, are you?
No.
And you have always been someone who I can tell has a lot of empathy. So we're happy to have you in rheumatology. Can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do with the Rheumatology Nurses Society?
So I'm Gwendolyn, and I'll go by Gwen because it's a lot easier to say, less syllables, Gwen Robinson. And I'm on the executive board for RNS. I've been on the executive board almost 2 years because you transition in and then you're actually like on the board. Now I'm also the historian. So I've been on the I've been in Rheumatology Nursing Society since the very beginning. Over 17 years ago, one of my reps told me about it, and it's been amazing because the knowledge and the networking that you get with the Rheumatology Nursing Society is just amazing. Because in the field of rheumatology, if you're not in a big hospital, then it's hard to get the knowledge and the networking with the other nurses and have the current information, because rheumatology is ever changing. It's been a lot of changes since starting in rheumatology 19 years ago.
Yeah, it's a, I sometimes think of it as like a detective style where things are ever changing. So can you tell us the mission of RNS and like, what do they do to support the nursing?
So the Rheumatology Nursing Society is a great society to belong to as a nurse, because their developmental education of nurses and benefits to the members for patients and then the patients' families and the community, keeping the toolbox working where we are able to go into their site all year round and get information needed to help the patients to navigate through whatever they're dealing with. Today, we're talking about spondylitis, but in rheumatology, there are several autoimmune disorders. And then when something comes along new, rheumatology nursing likes to kind of get right on it and go through it. When all the biosimilars came out, it was just amazing to have a group of people where they created part of the seminar to just address that portion of rheumatology. So their mission is to educate the nurses to be better support for the patients and their family members.
I love that. And right, rheumatology is tricky. So I think it's, and when you're in one place every day, you may not get the bigger picture, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Fun. I think it's the best because You know, I've worked in hospitals. I've been a nurse quite a while. But coming into a community where you're working every day and your doctor is your resource. Once I found rheumatology nurses, my resource opened up widely. And then you're networking with nurses across the country where we have been on the board is amazing too, because we just type something in and somebody on the board has had some experience and they're able to connect you with whoever you need to be connected to get what you need.
Yeah. Listen, I love doctors, but nurses know everything, right? They always have the inside track on.
Well, we rely on our docs, but it's good.
I know.
We rely on them. I got to give our docs the props. They get you diagnosed and they're really good. But the nurses are the ones that spend the most time with you, with the patients and have to hear your whole story. And that's something that rheumatology nurses kind of teach you also, to look at the whole patient, not just the diagnosis.
Right. Yeah, I love that. So what role in the treatment do you think rheumatology nurses play in we'll say spondylitis or spondyloarthritis for this conversation?
Nurses help the patients to understand the disease process, number one. So nurses are there in the beginning when you come in and you're complaining about back pain and you're thinking injury, not injury. So nurses actually triage you to get the information from you. Find out if your back pain in the morning is in the morning or is it after a workout. We're going to find out whether it's injury or is it after you've laid down and slept for a while. That kind of gets us on the route of letting the doctor know different things that is needed. So we help with getting the right information and history to the doctors. The doctors, again, come in and take their history, but we all know that patients tell nurses things. And then when the doctor comes in and he's going so that they don't get to tell them everything. And then sometimes they omit it on purpose because they feel like the doctor doesn't want to hear that when it's something prudent to diagnosing or getting you the correct treatment.
Yeah. I mean, I love the nurses that I have, that I get to spend time with, at my rheumatologist's office. And like in terms of helping patients manage, do you guys also do work around chasing down the insurance companies and all the good things there? That is a tireless job.
Oh, yes. So we're in big practices, they're probably called nurse navigators. And small practice, your infusion nurse, the nurse, the insurance provider, you're the PA provider. So you get the prior authorization, you do the appeals, you go in for everything that is needed on the patient. So, you know, with some diagnoses, you got to have the right correct coding and you have to make sure that everything is in place. And when the doctors are busy and the calls come and the denials are there, the nurse is the one that picks up that denial and get things going to get you approved for whatever treatment it is for your treatment. So nurses definitely help in that insurance process and knowing the ins and outs and the words to say. And also, I like to include my patients when I'm doing appeals. So I like to arm my patients and let them know what's going on, and also have the patient and I call the insurance company together. So because the insurance companies are notorious for saying, well, your doctor's office isn't getting us the information. And then they'll tell the patient that, and then they'll tell us that the patient isn't qualified or they can't contact the patient. So whenever happens, I like to get that patient on the phone. We're all three on the phone, and I have to start off with, this is Gwen. I am the provider's office. You also have the patient on the line so that they are recording, and here we are. As for a number for this call, do you have a record for this call that I can jot down in the patient's chart to record that we have talked with you guys and find out what the next step is in getting the patient taken care of? And sometimes we have to use big words like whatever is going to be the detriment of not taking that medicine.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to the patient? Make that person on the phone feel by denying this. This could happen to the patient, with the patient on the phone. It changes.
You think you have a higher rate of success when the patient's on the phone?
I think so. Because when the patient is on the phone, then there's no way they can say what they didn't say to the office. That's one. But two, they get to understand that it's not for the doctor's office to make money. It's actually because we care enough about the patient to get the medication that they can hear the patient needing the medication. So then that person on the phone is like, yeah.
I've seen it, and I've sat through. I've never called with the doctor's office, but that's. I mean, I know that there have been times when they have called and spent so much time on getting what I needed, and like I'm beyond grateful for that. So, so when you get into like treatment options, I mean, nurses, you guys are critical in helping people understand some of that. And like you said, sometimes they come in, the doc comes in, they sputter off, and then you need to look at the nurse and cry and ask what you need to do. Yeah. How do you find that? Do you find that patients turn to you for helping them understand the disease?
I think I hear in your voice, Jill, that patients kind of trust nurses more than doctors. Even though the doctors are the ones that know, to a certain extent, I just hear that maybe when I say trust factor, it's not in a knowledgeable thing. It's in a nurturing thing.
Okay.
So
yes,
not in knowledge. I'm not saying nurses are smarter than the doctors, but in that, I trust that if you're saying I should take this, that there's a good reason I should take it. Whereas the doctor, science has said it. As a nurse, you're saying it from what you see and experience with patients.
With patients. Oh, that's interesting. So
it's not like a knowledge, but it's more in a, you've seen patients take this medication.
Yeah.
And what do you think? And so that trust that you build with your nurse over time
helps you
to navigate through decisions of this isn't working or this is working. And just that first thought of it when I read the black box warning. So you tell the nurse, I've read the side effects of this, and I'm not sure that I want to take this medication.
Yeah, and I think you can probably be more vulnerable, right, as the patient. I'm going to put an asterisk that I fully 100%, no questions asked, trust my rheumatologist. I know not everyone has that. I'm sure there are people listening who don't have that benefit, but it's, yeah, I think you're right. And listen, I my daughter's in nursing school and my sister's a nurse. I started in nursing and then couldn't make it through the anatomy and physiology.
Because of life.
Yeah, because life of life. Or maybe laziness, or I was in college and maybe I was at the bar too much. So have you heard when you were talking about like patients saying, should I take this? Should I not take that? Have you run into misconceptions about something like spondyloarthritis or other rheumatic diseases as well that could use clarification?
First, let's clarify that I wasn't saying they don't trust the doctors.
I know.
Let's get that all clear. No, let's make sure we get it all clear, because we as nurses trust our doctors too. So
yeah.
We have supported to the doctors. We just kind of bring it back to a level of understanding.
And humanness sometimes.
And humanness, yeah. So we trust our doctors too. You know, those doctors are the ones who actually come up with the diagnosis and they recommend the treatments. And then because of what we've seen with the treatments, we're able to support that. So we're all a team. Let's get all that in the clear. But misdiagnosis and misunderstanding, a lot of times it's with the ladies that they get misdiagnosed or they don't get the diagnosis because of the standard of how they diagnose is. When you do the standard of diagnosis of spondylitis things, young men, and then so you go, okay. So we've seen that where you have to go several times before you're actually diagnosed, get the radiographics and things that document that this is what's going on. So the thing that brings you to the office though is something that just won't go away. And then your doctor draws some labs, your primary care doctor, draw some labs and refer you out to a rheumatologist, and then it goes from there. But a lot of times the primary care doctors are writing it off and not sending you to the rheumatologist. And that's where that gap of treatment is, because you don't get to the right provider to be able to get that diagnosis, and you're taking anti-inflammatories and different things like that for mechanical issues, and that's not what's going on with you.
Right. Interesting. And let me ask you this, and you and I were talking in the green room about going through college, and spondylitis wasn't one of the top discussion points. Do you feel like that has changed, and do you feel like the Rheumatology Nurses Society has helped that to change for the nurses to be able to talk about it?
Absolutely. So Rheumatology Nursing Society coming along gave rheumatology nurses more specific things and topics to what we deal with. And so when the spondylitis come along, we actually have what they call breakout sessions.
Where, oh, great.
In the annual conference, if you are already taking the spondylitis, you don't have to take that. But if you haven't, the new people coming in, there's a breakout session where you get to pick what you need to learn and the places you need some support in. Also, if you have more than one area, we have that website where you can go back to the website and pick up those courses that, because it was in a breakout session, you wasn't able to attend. So after the conference is all over, you're able to go back in and look at some of the breakout sessions. So that information is still there where you can get that information. So if I decided that this is more important than that, so I think they have done a lot of educating in that. And then doctors have, with the Rheumatology Association, also seen that we have more tools to say, let's look and see if it's fusing. Let's look and see what's going on versus just saying, back pain, here's this prescription.
Yeah.
Come back and see us. So a lot of times these patients end up in the urgent cares and the ERs, and they just get kind of sent out without getting that. So I just think that'd be another area to try to get some education on it is in our ERs and urgent care. So when they're doing those x-rays, that they're looking at them a little closer, are they making sure that that x-ray gets to the primary care with some type of a note of the readings?
Yeah, this is what's going on. So when you, if you were a patient, how do you recommend patients most effectively communicate like what they really need if they're struggling with something, maybe related to the diagnosis, or they don't feel comfortable telling the doctor, as you may have mentioned sometimes.
The answer is to that. If I were a patient, one, it's something new to me. So I'm going to do some research. I'm going to look around. Cleveland Clinic is like the best for looking for anything that you're looking for if you're just looking online. So be careful what you Google. Don't just go to Dr. Google and trust Dr. Google. So I would go to the Mayo Clinic and look for different things there, arm myself with questions from that area, where I would get questions when I go into my doctor's office, be able to ask my physician questions about, one, what is this that I have? Two, how do I manage this? What's going to go on in the care of this? And then when they started talking about different biologics and things like that, now I'm big-eyed and scared, because especially when somebody says chemo and it's not chemo. So nurses help you to understand the difference between a biologic and chemo. So nurses help you navigate with that. So as a patient, you have to ask those questions.
Yeah.
Don't just assume that, it's just chemo, or tell other people it's chemo. Ask questions.
Yeah.
And I always say, as a patient, if you get somewhere and they don't like you asking questions, go somewhere else.
Oh, I love that.
Because you should always be able to ask the questions. If I don't have the answers, I just promise you that I'm going to help you to research and get with the doctors and get the answers that you need. Because you should be able to ask it from the simplest. There's no simple question.
Right.
You know, whatever it is that you're asking, you should be able to ask and you should get an answer. If you don't get an answer from the nurse at that time, you should get the answer that I'm going to look deeper into it and I'll get back to you. So I don't expect for the nurses to know everything, but I expect for us to be able to tell you as a patient, let me look into this a little bit more and then I'll get back with you. Because if you're asking that question and I don't have the answer, I need to know the answer too. So you're helping me as a patient.
Do you feel like you provide a lot of emotional support to your patients over time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a new thing going on. And the diagnosis alone, and then you're in a rheumatologist's office, and then you look it up and you read this big outline of what it is, and you go autoimmune, and what is going on? What is my body doing to itself? And what is going to happen to me in the long run? Is it going to kill me? Then you want to give me these medications, and I'm wondering about the medications. Well, if I don't die from the disease, am I going to die from the medications? So you got a lot as a patient going on in that head of yours of, oh. So what I just did, take a deep breath. When the patients come in, take a deep breath. And then I try to explain to my patients with the different treatments we have now, which is great. We have more than one treatment. So if one doesn't work, we're going to be doing lab work and we're going to be doing a lot of things, asking you questions, filling surveys out to see where you are until we get to what works. So I like to explain to them, they're like a puzzle. And then once we find that piece to your puzzle and get your puzzle all together, we can have you back on the road to a normal life or as normal as possible.
I like that a lot. So do nurses sometimes, I'm imagining, work with patients or with patients in the doc around like holistic sort of treatments or therapies as opposed to only bio, like we need biologics and the meds.
Well, definitely. What you're asking about is like the stretching. And then the mental part of things. So definitely nurses over and doctors are telling you it's not always just a pill that's going to fix it. You have to deal with the mental part of things. So first we have to deal with what's the changes in your life and allow you time. Nurses allow you time to talk and to work through it and to vent. So nurses are there to hear what's going on. A lot of times patients don't need us, as we're here on the podcast and talking is what I need to do. Sometimes patients just need me to hear. So as a nurse, I need to hear them first. And many times I offer stretches, lots of stretches, and we'll show the patient how on the wall, in the chair, in your bed, that you could do some of these stretches versus on the floor, where the floor is no longer your friend. So you're not going to do your stretches on the floor, but you still can stretch, and you're going to use the wall to balance, or you're going to use the chair to balance, or you're going to just do it in your bed before you roll out of bed in the morning. But those stretches will help a lot to get you up, going, and into the day.
I agree. And as no one can see, but I had to stand up because I've been sitting in my chair for 8 hours, like 8 or 9 hours so far today.
I saw that. So
yeah, up and down all day long. Some weeks I'll get on the floor, other weeks not so much. Yes. And I'm sure a lot of us are that way that listen to this. Okay, so we talked a little bit about advocacy, which I think you would sum up as ask as many questions as you have to ask.
Ask as many questions as you have to ask. Do a little research. And if you don't do any research, when you go into the doctor's office, have your questions.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that you're needing to ask about, you have to write them down and take them in with you so that you get your answers, because that's the one thing I do recommend to my patients, because you get in the office with me and you haven't written anything down. And then once the doctor's gone or you're at home, you think, oh, shucks, I forgot to ask about this. I wonder if that's related to this. But you knew you wanted to ask that, but you just didn't write it down. So I always recommend writing things down, jotting them down. Sometimes you never have to look at your list, but just the fact of having written them down, it kind of sticks it in your head for memory.
Yeah, I like that. I keep a notes on my phone when I'm thinking. Yes. And then when I go in, I'm like, what? I got like 100 questions. So do you or the practice you're at, do you guys use any like tools or newsletters or good news notes to communicate with patients on updates or research and treatment?
We don't hear in the practice like specifically, but once a patient is diagnosed and put on treatment, we may utilize whatever the treatment is. They usually have a nurse support portlet that we allow, ask the patient if they would like to be signed up for that portlet specific to their medication and what's going on with them, where they have a nurse liaison that will be able to communicate with them on the medications during the time.
That is incredible. So that is something I think is maybe keeps me sane as a patient, is getting the ability to communicate and get something back yes. quickly is really helpful. And then what do you think like the most common challenges the patients have that you see are?
Pain is real. Getting through the pain. First acknowledging that I really do have pain. It's in the beginning, you're like, oh, this will go away. Oh, it'll go away. And you do nothing. And so saying that what I have is real. It's not going to just go away by itself. I have to do the things. I have to take the steps. Once I have to be diagnosed. So I have to keep going. I can't just put this pain off and say, show up to urgent care and they load me up and then I'm good. And then it comes back and is repeatedly coming back. I need to get somewhere where I can find out the true meaning of it. No more Band-Aids. Let's find out what's going on. So urgent cares and ERs are Band-Aids. And then if you get to your doctor, you get diagnosed. Now we can get to treatments. And now we can get to fixing what's wrong, trying to fix the problem. So I think that it's really important that you get the correct treatment plans. And you know that we know that it's real. And then you take your treatment plan so that you can get rid of the pain and stop the progression of the disease process. So that's also as big. You want to stop progression. So depending on what you're getting is what's going to stop the progression of the disease process.
Yeah, it's a big deal and sometimes a long road, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to throw you a curveball here. Do you have a favorite patient you can tell us about anonymously?
I do. My favorite patient with the spondylitis happens to be a school teacher. And so, you know, with school teachers, and she's like middle school. And when she first was getting diagnosed, she went through the whole gamut of nobody believing that she really had the pain. Because when you look at her, she looks like she's fine. She's not bent over. She's not got a curvature in the spine. She just has this pain that won't go away. So it took her a long time to get diagnosed, and then started on one biologic. It worked for a while. And then after a while, that didn't work anymore. And the pain was getting more. And so then it's time to go back to sitting, talking with her, listening to her life and listening to the challenges she has with being a school teacher and having the disease and having to take time off of work to go to treatments. And summertime's easy, but when school's on, it's on. It's hard to get to your treatments. And now you have to leave your class with somebody else. So all of those things of managing her life of being a school teacher and needing to have the treatments that required her to come in versus a treatment that she can take and not have to miss much of work, but helping to navigate with that. She just loved coming in because it was a chance where she could just talk about the issue of what's going on with her. And then finding out that with this favorite patient, some of the family members had other disorders that let her know that there is some type of a gene in her family with autoimmune diseases that may not come as the same, but different.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that for teachers ever. I suppose, right? It's such a rigorous schedule. And if you've got to come in for treatment, I love the infusion room because it's not ideal, but you get in there and it's like a spa day because you have to turn off all the
can't get on the phone. You can't do your email. I treat it like, oh, sorry, I'm going to be out today. I can't take calls. I love that. So what is the one thing that you would give advice on to the patients about being proactive in managing this disease?
When you have pain, let the doctors know. You don't just think it'll be fine. The patients need to let the doctors know what's going on with them through their pain. They need to be able to discuss if the treatment's working or not. So treatments don't always work. It's not always your piece of the puzzle. But we won't know, because lab work sometime will say, hey, inflammation markers are down, this, that, the other. But the patient is having lots of pain. So you have to look at the whole picture. But if the patient is fine and the markers are fine, then we go, we don't think about any changes.
Yeah.
But if the patient's not fine, then we need to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, I like that. And when they leave, do you give them advice on get out there? And I know you mentioned stretching. I think that's a big one. I imagine you're a cheerleader for a lot of your patients.
Movement is our friend in all of our different disease processes for the autoimmune. Movement is your friend. The disease tells you to be still, but you have to know that that's just going to make it worse. Movement is your friend, especially with the spondylitis, when you lay still, and that's how you get diagnosed, because it's in the morning. It's when I wake up. It's when I've been still. So the stretching, the movement, the walking, that is your friend. These are now your best friend. Listen to your body. Don't overdo things. But we're always talking about movement. We're very supportive in telling you to be active with movement.
I love it. What did we miss in talking about RNS or nursing? Did I miss anything big?
Going over my notes just to see, make sure.
Oh, you take notes? I'm impressed. I love that.
I took notes before.
Sounds like a nurse.
So we talked about misconceptions that, only occurs in men. We didn't miss that. We did talk about them. We talked about living with it. We talked about talking with your healthcare provider to know that you have the issues and to believe that your issues are real. Patient support, we talked about nurses being your support. So with the Rheumatology Nursing Association, it's a great support for nurses, for patients with spondylitis. That's a tough word always.
I know, totally.
Spondyl patients are not as rare as they used to be because people are getting diagnosed. So the rareness was because people were not being diagnosed. They were misdiagnosed and treated for just mechanical back pains.
Yeah.
And it's not a mechanical issue.
Do you ever find yourself like out and about in the store, grocery store, someone talks to you and they're telling you about their back pain and you're like, no, you need to go get your markers checked for HLA-B27. Does this happen to you?
It has not.
No, it's not.
It has not. It has not. Because, you read my bio. I'm fairly busy.
Yeah.
So grocery stores aren't my thing. It's usually I'm in the office and then I do some urgent care work too. It may be something that when a back pain comes in and I'm looking at that back pain and I'm definitely asking questions about the injury or the course of it. And the thing about being in an urgent care or a triage and a patient there, back pain can come from so many different places.
Yeah.
But that's why I said education in the ERs or the urgent cares is prudent, because if those docs know to be looking for that versus saying kidney or saying that mechanical or saying that, different things that could be back pain.
Yeah.
And actually getting those x-rays and looking at those x-rays and saying, hey, you need this, and also making the follow-ups with where they need to go if you see this.
Yeah, that's a big one, right, is follow-on treatment.
We can get urgent care to do it. The numbers would go up tremendously.
yeah, I would agree. Okay, so here's my last question for you, unless I missed anything, is if you had $1 million, what would you like to see change and how nurses can treat rheumatology and spondylitis patients?
I'd like to see every patient being able to get the treatments. And so in our office, we do. For patients that are insured or not insured, you have the different foundations and the different things that are there. Many doctor's offices, once you're not insured, then you're kind of like a self-pay. And a self-pay won't get the medications that they need if the office is not going to fight for it and get it. So that extra money would go into that office fee that you have when you come in as a self-pay to be able to get those medications that would help you to stop the progression of your disease. So I would definitely have that program that assists patients who are not insured or underinsured to get the treatments that they can get for the different disorders. So we do, I have to give it to pharma. Pharma does have free drug programs. But even with the free drug programs, you got to find somebody that's willing to do the free drug program. And then now you have that chair time that is still having to be paid for out of pocket. So right. That out of pocket portion to the patients, because they're the middleman people. They're the people who are actually the working Americans that are doing different things and just are underinsured. And then they can't get the treatments that they need. I would definitely want to do something to make sure everybody is able to be treated versus only the educated, the insured, and the financially fit.
That is beautiful, because I think we forget often, right? And it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher.
The margins are getting so close and so crazy. But and like I said, in our office, the doctors, we do different things. And the nurses, I'm definitely on. So I'm getting those, calling those foundations, getting those free drugs, getting that paperwork filled out, getting the doctor to fill it out. And then I'm going to bat even with the doctor if the patient really can't afford that chair time, saying, hey, you know, what can we do to kind of cut the cost for this particular patient on that time of the chair? Or maybe we need to get a medication that is an injectable where there's not much of a chair time, but let's look at more of, let's get this patient treated versus not treating the patient.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I love that. Okay. Did I miss anything, or should we get you back to work?
I don't think you missed anything. I think you did a great job. And I think as a patient, you're very knowledgeable about the different things and the questions. And I love that you love your nurses.
I do. I don't know what I do without them. Honestly. This has been delightful. I love talking to you. I love the nurses everywhere I go.
But I think rheumatology nurses are a different batch of nurses so also. Too. Rheumatology nurses get to sit a little bit more with the patients, understand the patients and the families. Because one of the things I love is to have a family member come with my patient. So the family member is able to hear from us that the pain is real. Because a lot of times you came in, we said this, and your family member still wants to know why you can't do the dishes today and why you aren't sweeping or mopping the floor, because you look fine to me. But if they come in and they actually hear from the doctor and the nurse what's going on, they're more apt to say, hey, I understand that today is not a good day for you. Right. And they're able to be more compassionate towards you too, because you look normal. So I don't understand what you're talking about. So family members need to be a part of that diagnosing care, that treatment plan. At some point, anybody diagnosed with any autoimmune need to have their family members in that, especially the family members that are most the closest to them, children, spouses, need to be connected into that community so that they could hear from the physician and the nurses that this is real. And you can't just see it with the naked eye. The naked eye can't see it.
And it's astounding when I just see the world around me, the lack of empathy, even to the people closest to you that occurs, whether it's a disease or, you know, something else going on.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think put it in, I mean, nurses, right? You guys are off the hook. Like, I think they need a new empathy scale for nurses beyond what most of us can conceive of. But yeah, I mean, it's like having family members in to teach them that is awesome.
I think it's very important for the patient. And we get this, you may have come in all the time by yourself, but if you're talking to me, the nurse, and you keep saying, my husband don't understand, or my kids are this, that, and the other, I'm the nurse to encourage you, bring your kid, bring your husband, bring them with you to the next appointment so that we can just, it won't be me saying, well, you said, she said, you said, none of that. It's more of that education of, we're talking in the room about what this is that you're dealing with, and they're able to hear what it is. It's not an attack on the family. It's an educational portion to teach the family what's going on.
Yeah, I love that. All right, well, I'm so grateful for your time. And the Rheumatology Nurses Society is lucky to have you proliferating the next generation of rheumatology nurses. And I am positive that you're that I'm not only HLA-B27 positive, but I'm positive that you are, that you are a gift to your patients. All right. We'll get you out of there. Have a good evening, and we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Okay. Thank you so much.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.